Session number 30342, reel 11.
Again, this is another view of the first one, and this is the hill's been shelled.
You know, better to wake up anyway, David, because it's better to drop the door dead, though, that.
Those are the French troops that you mentioned. These are retreating.
Yeah, but which drivers more or less dressed like the French ones, if you look at them.
Are they dressed like that?
No, they were dressed like when they on board jets, actually.
Oh, with it, yeah. With the little, with the cabbie, with it.
You know, that is with arms. And the French man, I think.
Yeah, those are French, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Those are the stretcher bearers. I think that's the river you talked about.
Yeah.
Those are the stretcher bearers, that's Griffin. Obviously the battles, you're further up there.
Yeah, I've seen lads walking there, shell shock and all that.
That's just neat.
Yeah, they're a pretty fair sized group there, but there's more of a pump.
And that's the last.
Yeah.
So that those hills don't.
Sorry?
Do they seem familiar?
No, I can't see it.
How do you switch it off?
Switch off with this here. That one there. That's it. But it was back.
Yeah. Well, we can leave it there.
We're going to take it out, otherwise, we might forget it and take it away.
It's difficult. Right. So we're talking about after you were taken prisoner. You're still in Tunisia. Did anything about, you know, you're behind the German lines now. Could you just describe what their setup was and what any points of interest that struck you at the time about the way they had things organised?
I'm afraid I can't. No. All I remember is was it getting taken to the boat to go across to Italy.
What was the boat like? What was that?
Well, it was very big. It was kept down in a hold. And I can't recall getting anything to eat. But we got there. You could drink water, but the water was from a tank, and you could taste all the metallic water. And it was dreadful. And you drink as much water as you could, it cost money, it's a billion dollars, so it's take away the hunger. Then I also remember mines floating about, and we're getting a bit apprehensive about our mines going to kill our own land, sort of thing. And the Germans were trying to shoot the mines. And a friend of mine, Mackay, who was looking at me, he had to go and shoot our own mines and stuff like that.
Did he let him have a go with a rifle?
Yeah, but it was they watched him and all that, you know, yeah. Let him have a go with their rifles, the German rifles.
Did he hit any?
I don't remember any getting blown up anyway.
What did you think about it at the time, the fact that they let him...
Sorry?
What did you think at the time that they were letting him use the rifle?
Well, I thought myself, it's a bit strange, but he must have got word that he was a good shot, I don't know, but anyway, he had shot at the mines. He hit them, I think, but of course it didn't go off.
Now, you were put on this ship.
Yeah.
About how many POWs were on the ship?
Oh, that I don't know, son. It was quite a few of them. Must have got some grub at all, but it wasn't very good.
And what regiments were they from? There was obviously there was yourself and your friend Mackay. Who else? Were there any other?
Well, there could have been from different companies. It could have been Dutch allies. It could have been anything. You know.
Were they all British?
Yeah, as far as I know. Yeah.
So there weren't any Americans? Or?
Oh no. I met Americans later on.
And was the ship? It was German. You said it was German crew. It was a German crew.
German crew. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there was Germans on the ship, looking at us, like sentries and things like that. You know, soldiers looking at us. And what vehicles, and so we also got took by transport to this place called Capua, Camp 66.
And what was that like?
And there was quite a few people there. It was all barbed wire around. We had sentries looking after us, and we were Italian sentries, obviously. And they were scared, of course, to a certain degree, because when we were on guard at night time, we just walked on up the barbed wire out, shouting, sent the daily alert to each other, keeping in touch with one another, like, sort of thing. And we started to get food parcels, but you didn't get very often at first. You got one between two. Now, when you got the food parcel of the Red Cross, you used to barter them. You used to go and you had a tin of soup, you went to barter it for a tin of jam or whatever you possibly could, or that. You used to walk around the camp barter with different guys or something like that. But of course, the craft was, you'd take a name of you'd barter. I tried to get a tin of jam and you opened it with a tin of rubbish soup and things like that. I'd put on what the fellas had put on. And there was some arms had been taken prisoner. They were put in this prison camp. But they were kept especially to one side. And we used to have a concert party there that they had made up. And we used to sing this song called Campo Consentimento PG 66. This blacks when whites put never blows. Soon will come the day when we will sail away from Campo Consentimento to PG 66. We always sing that. That was when the guy had wrote that. And we used to get this joke of trying to do a turn over and get the same culture, we had the same gangs, same suit, every other dealing sort of thing. But apparently I tried to escape from in the lower cross through the sewer, Camp 66, and a lot of people did get away, crossing the sewer, right? But that happened before we got there. But of course, the major story, like, you know, over and over again, like, you know, it was really something special. But as far as I know, anyway, they were going away.
Was it a big camp?
It was a fair-sized camp, yeah.
So about how many prisoners do you think would have been in there?
I'd give them a guess, I'd say, well, a couple of hundred, and the food we got wasn't very good.
What was it?
We used to get what we call a bread roll here. And when you broke it up, it was like a lot of insects in it, like called weevils and things like that. And at first you say, oh, you know, but you just start eating them anyway because you're hungry. And we used to make some macaroni and spaghetti and things like that that you got. And it was one place, and I say I was about 12 stone something, I went down to 9 stone.
When did you come
back to England though? Without getting enough good, getting enough club and all that.
Were you hungry in Italy then?
I was at two places in Italy. Well, must have been there about 12, but I don't know. I can't recall actually. But we got transferred from Capua to a place called Balzerati, that was at Camp 53, I believe. And we were better off there because you got more food parcels and things like that. You know. And we kind of get built up a wee bit. And of course, by that time, I learned what not to do and what to do.
Yeah, what was that?
Well, for one thing, you weren't allowed to have any knives and things like that. But the guards used to say, when you got a Red Cross parcel, I could get the tins, what you call tin bashing. And with the big cups and pans and things like that out of the tins and they get very, very cleverly done and how they got the expertise to do it. And so they make knives and they get spoons and that, you know. And they got quite good at it. And used to have it, they said, take the tea bags off you, put your Red Cross parcel and make a big urn of tea. You go there and get a cup of tea. So what you had to make it. You get that probably twice or three times a day. Of course, we're being late in strong tea. But it's a bit of last, and it was always cold because it had been that long. But that was a bit worried about it. So it started to give you soup and things like that. It was a little bit better in there. Maserati. And things, there was one bloke there, Scotsman, called Harris, obviously. And we used to get this macaroni together, and a lot of cabbage as well. And his party piece was, this is a true story against the help of God, was if you used to give him the food to eat, and you said what they call, your underpants was what they call cellular drawers, tiny little holes in them. And Haggis is going to perform his party trick. You said give him all this macaroni or spaghetti or cabbage, whatever you could afford to give him. So now on his bunk, on his bed, lifted his legs up, fart away, and he strike a match, and a big flame come out of his back saying, "Hey, all of you." That was going for a place from Kelleher. All the guys that couldn't come on to see Haggis, because he didn't mind him because he's getting more grub and all that, you know. Yeah. There's a guy coming, he was the only fella I knew, and he would say, I'd been the Air Force. The rest of them were all army guys in the yard. They used to call him an educated idiot. I don't know why, just because he was the Air Force, I suppose. And I wasn't anything different about any other lads and all that. He always got called an educated idiot.
Did he find out why he was in with the army? Why he was in your camp?
No, I don't know. I know. But look, yeah, I get back again. When he first got captured, when he first got taken to Italy, walk along, and well, typical army, morning and clothing, played hell about different things and what have you and all that. And talking about the eye ties and anything, and there's one guy tied walking alongside of us, and he was listening. And apparently, he was a lad who come from England, and he was must have been from Italian parents. He probably born there, I don't know. But he lived up north somewhere, a jolly lad. And when we started talking, he turned around and says, "Well, I and all that, and says, what we do." Proper jolly accent and that, you know. And he was all right then, he wasn't too bad. But he had went on holiday apparently, and he had to stay there. But he had to join the Italian army. Which is strange, isn't it? You know. But he was a jolly lad, yeah.
Now, I should have asked you a little bit earlier, when you were out in North Africa, and you first, you know, before you were taken prisoner, had the mail caught up with you? Were you getting letters from home, and were they getting letters from you?
Well, I suppose I was getting letters from home, but I was getting the South Shields Gazette sent me by my parents, which was giving us a bit of information on that, but it wasn't going to send on anything.
So you were getting the mail had actually caught up with you when you were in Africa?
Oh, well, very little mail, I suppose, really.
When you were taken prisoner, how long was it before your parents found out what had happened to you? Obviously you wouldn't have known this till you got back home and they told you, but...
No, it took a fair bit of time because apparently my parents found out I was missing and they didn't know. And they found out from what I can kind of like read the paper that I was a Good Friday, I believe, when they found out I was taken prison, which was a bit of a relief to them and all that.
And apparently you've still got the Shields Gazette with your picture in it. Apparently it was via the Vatican that they found out. Do you know anything about, was there anybody in the camp that took your details or anything, any kind of Catholic kind of...
No, I know that my chap up north, my best man is Sir Ronald, Sir Keaton Trust, he's the one that sent me the information about the Shields Gazette scene. He had a photograph of me. And he apparently was following me around. When my battalion arrived in Algiers, he was not too, he come a bit after. And he knew somehow that I was in that vicinity. Whenever I moved on, he was moving on after me. And I was just gone, things like that, you know. And of course he lost me. And, I went to be a prisoner, of course, he didn't probably know me at all about that, just all about later. But he was probably trying to catch up with me, as it were. And he never, ever did.
Now, what about the Italian authorities? How often were you able to write home? Because apparently there was like letter cards and letter forms and so on.
I think it was once a week or twice a month, and we got this. But it was only very, very short letters you had to write. I've got what it does of the don't wait this and I must have got my parents and
everything. What about your parents and friends writing to you in the camp? How long did it take before?
It probably quite some time with that, you know. And my mother used to send cigarettes. But I'm heavy smoking, but she sent me food parcels, cigarette parcels she said they got, which I never got. And she was sending quite frequent. And the story was that a lot of people up north were pinching the cigarettes before they went off because the judge told them they were not much having themselves. And I never got any parcels at all in the prison. And other guys did.
Those were personal parcels sent?
My mum, my brother, my dad, or whatever, wasn't it?
So they just never turned? Yeah.
I never got any. And they were sent quite frequently. Because we didn't tell you so enough.
Now, you mentioned previously about one of your colleagues, Matthew Stable, and it was one of the casualties, and getting letters. Can you remember when they arrived? Where you were when these letters
arrived? Well, I was in Germany, I think it was. I've been transferred to Germany. When the people from England was trying to find out what happened to other guys, that was a particular regiment, because they didn't know what happened. And were asking me about Stapleton. You know, was he prisoner, was he killed, or what? And I just said, Joe was a good guy, and I didn't want to know about myself, but then just find out what happened.
Did you get many inquiries?
I don't know, but Stapleton, remember, because like I said a few minutes ago there, when they started singing and all that, Stapleton, and he was a genuine, he's a really nice young fellow and all that, and that's a good guy. And I thought, oh dear, his parents wouldn't know, he could be alive, he could be anywhere, you know, and he could be living in hope, he's now somewhere up in the hills in Tunisia and that, you know.
Was there any inquiries where you were able to say, you know, yes, so
not me, no. But one thing that stuck in my mind, there was one discussion, I was in Germany, I've jumped to Germany, and he was married back with a couple of kids, and that's all he talked about. Whenever he got the chance, he would bring up his photograph, show his wife and two kids, that, you know. That's what I'm looking for, to go home to and all that. Then one day he got a photograph of his wife and three kids, and I think he broke his heart. You obviously know what happens, and he was really, really upset. So the boys had to sort of rally around and get out of him, take it and all that, and get him, forget it. And it took a little while, but he managed to accept it. And says it. He apparently wrote home and says, okay. But it must be to everybody, you know. Myself, I hadn't even a girlfriend when I left home. So I was just an ordinary girl who had been sort of chasing around, never caught anybody else.
You mentioned earlier about like in the battalion, in the army, like, you know, different cliques. Was it mainly the single fellas would stick together and the married men would keep them? Or would there be married men that would be mixing in?
I suppose it was. Well, at that day, the best part of the worst thing, I suppose. You know, only when I told him was McCarty, he got married, and it was the following week after his child was born.
Did McCarty follow you up to camp? To 66 and 53, was he with you?
He must have done. Because he come with me, yeah.
So who would you be sharing the parcels with in Italy in 66?
Oh, Mackay, yeah, well, the first Mackay, because, yeah, he was in the top book, he sitting in the bottom book, and we had the Berry Max, because that was a sing group in America that was popular at the time, called the Berry Max. So we killed ourselves the Berry Max. Weren't that many to tell, I can assure you, like, but we call ourselves the Berry Max.
What was morale like in the first camp, particularly just to talk about that one?
Oh, it was okay, but it was just so disturbing because you're walking on barbed wire, and sometimes you're sitting down in the sun, and you sit down there, and when you stood up, you're so weak with not having a lot of grub, and the sun beating down on you. You stand up just fall flat again till you realise it. When you stand up, you've got hay. Because you get flatty, then stand for a while before you start walking. Because when you've got a quick circuit, you go flat enough, you know.
Was there much kind of you've talked about kind of concert parties and so on? Other prisoners of war have talked about gambling and people could, you know, find the lady in games of that kind of thing. Does anybody get involved in that?
Not in the prison camp, I don't know, I can't recall it. Not in the prison camp. No. You could, well, you, whatever you had to share with your mate.
What did you actually have at this stage? I mean, you'd been taken prisoner. What did you manage to take into the, to take Italy? Literally, what did you have with, did you, were you able to keep things like your mess tin and...
Well, you had as much, white clothing or wearing at the tent, you kept that. And when you went to Italy, they give you a razor and a shaving brush. And the razor was a wooden one, with the razor blades with the three holes in. And it was a cheap and nasty thing, because remember, the wood wasn't cut, so when I tried to shave, or cut myself, because the razor blade wasn't sitting in properly. Like a wooden razor, I think I had made by the place in. And I cut myself with that thing. And I must have got another one from somewhere, some long way, I don't know. I had toothbrush in that thing. And that's about all. The best thing we had, the best, well, our best things. We used to get all suited in that thing.
Did you, was there any kind of so-called camp money that you issued with that? Like a money that was issued to prisoners, because apparently
we've got money in Germany, I think, marks and things like that.
It was like Lagergeld, that kind.
And you could buy Ursus beer, which was just pretend beer, and this, you could buy soap. It was just like trying to wash your face with a brick or something. There was no lager at all. And I think there's nothing else you could buy out, I don't think. Because we used to barter as best we could, but we get some bread. To get white bread, buy white bread, get white, to really something. Because I remember one thing in Germany, we had some bread given us that had been used in the 14th War. This sounds like a bit Tales from China. In a tin, and when you opened the tin was as black as noodles knocker. The bread was, and you had it, you had to cut the size off and eat what was in the middle of it. And we had it, because it was out of it, put that way.
Did you have much contact with the Italian guards? Were you able to barter with them?
No, some fellas did. But I never did, you know. Some fellas did it, barter with the Italian guard, but were a bit timid, because I remember one that come from South Shields. I knew he went to the same school as I did, but he's a bit older than me, and he would always try to get a suntan, you know, just lie about the sun as much as he could, and you'd lie there with not a stitch of clothes on. The Italians went down to pick the load of soil and drop one of his privates and all that sort of thing. I was really cross about that. And when he got himself dressed up and put his shorts on again, he saw this Italian sentry come around, and he opened his shirt and he ran towards the German sentry. The German sentry ran back out. You know, and he got him scared. And he apparently escaped that land in Italy. He went back there.
Can you remember who
he was? No, I should have known him, but it's long gone now. But he got back there, didn't he?
What about the Italian authority with the commandant at either of these camps? Did they make their presence as felt at all? Anything you remember?
Well, I didn't see the camp. We had a RSM bloke that was in charge of all the prisoners, and he used to deal with the Italian officials and that, you know.
Was that like the so-called man of confidence?
Somebody got you here.
Well, so what about you know, in, well, describe each camp in turn. In Camp 66, what would the accommodation be? How many men would be in a particular, what would it be in the first camp?
Well, it wasn't so bad there, but Yeah, it wasn't too bad there, but we never got enough grub, like I said. And we got some food parcels, but you didn't get enough to sort of satisfy you. Yeah. And we used to barter, and not again you got a parcel for each of you. But, you see, when you're hungry, I mean, you say to me, after I've had a baby for 6 months, I'm hungry. You're ready for a meal. But when you're hungry, I mean, you're really hungry. So when you're really hungry and you get a tin of jam, you just, instead of putting the jam on where you just open the tin and eat the jam with a spoon. And you might eat the sugar and you might eat whatever, because it's the sweet things. When you're hungry, you don't think of meat pies and big steaks and fish and chips and sort of thing. You just think of sweet things. So when you open a tin of jam, you just scoop a tin of jam there and then. And a tin of milk, condensed milk, and eat a tin of milk.
And would people do that when they got the parcels?
That's what I say, that's what you could, when you first got them. That's what you did because you were so hungry. You didn't have the bread to pour on anyway, and things like that. But you used to spoon there. Well, you got the bread rolls I've talked about, that the weevils and things like that. So you say, you were so hungry for sweet things, you eat a tin of jam, or spoon a tin of milk.
Did you smoke at this time?
No, I didn't smoke at the time, no.
Because other veterans, other prisoners of war, you know, the people would barter cigarettes.
They would barter cigarettes. Yeah. I used to get some cigarettes occasionally, and I would probably spell my the fellow prisoners when they get an extra tin of meat or whatever they could get.
So some people would actually they'd be prepared to, even though they were hungry, they would still swap the food for...
Well, I should imagine they would go more for food unless for real avid smoking, that sort of thing.
Were there any worming camps in Italy? Or were there
I never come across any because we to get us done walking down barbed wire all the time.
So in both camps you were literally just in the camp 24 hours a day and that was it?
Lie in bed, get up, have a wash, walk outside, go and have a lie down in the afternoon, go up to sun, go out again. Just try and keep yourself in use that way.
Were there any kind of other veterans have talked about at the PAWs about kind of classes, people, prisoners of war running classes on various things and
classes,
you know, classes, you know, talks.
Oh,
education.
Well, there was debates and things like that. Yeah, that was, I found that very interesting. Instead of a debate, instead of a couple of blokes that could really patter. Had these debates, we used to attend the meetings, and I found that very interesting. You know, sort of.
What about church service? Were you able to go to church?
Oh yes, I was a Catholic. I'm a Catholic, and I used to go to the church there, and not quite good. When I got the other camp at Maserati, they had a chapel there that had been actually made up with the prisoners of war, and it was painted with coffee beans and things like that. You know, they grow coffee and they got actually painted all the church and said that, you know, and the statues of metal, of course, and that. You know. We must have got some prayer book of some kind. I can't because they have one now. But I always had a picture of a... Did I show that picture of the ring I had? My mother. I had a ring.
No.
I've got it upstairs. Go get it.
Yeah, I'll just switch it off.
Yeah, I'm still going to get it.